Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Netball New Zealand is celebrating 100 years this May. It makes it the oldest national netball body in the world. Netball remains, of course, the single most popular sport among women and girls in Aotearoa, an estimated 300,000 players annually. And in anticipation of the centenary, RNZ reporter Bridget Tunnicliffe has been looking into the sport's history, its legacy, and the challenges it faces moving forward. Bridget joins us on the line now. Kia ora to you.
Kia ora.
It's a great series. I was really interested by one of the early comments from the chief executive of Netball NZ, I think in your first piece. There's no other organisation in New Zealand with the breadth of connection with women and girls in our community. I guess it's probably true, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember when I first heard her say that, I was like, wow, is it? And the more I thought about it, I thought, yeah, she's right. I mean, netball is completely embedded in our education system at primary school, intermediate, high school. It's such a generational game. You know, 3-4 generations of women, it's not uncommon for generations to play the game. Most girls would be offered the opportunity to play netball as young as 7 in New Zealand. Most females in New Zealand would get a very early introduction to netball, and not just women. I mean, if you went into walked into any office and just said, who here has played netball? Even if it was just one time, I'm sure a lot of guys would put up their hands as well, because there are a lot of social leagues that are run as well, you know, like indoor netball, mixed, twilight netball, summer netball, that sort of thing. So at some point in time, a lot of New Zealanders have played netball.
Totally. I used to play for the spin-offs recreational team during the week, getting my butt handed to me time after time. It was a chastening experience. I mean, you're a netballer, aren't you?
Yeah, I started playing when I was 8 at Hampton Hill Primary School in Tawa. I just knew I remember the first time I ever saw netball being played, I just knew instinctively that I wanted to play it, and I just couldn't wait to play it. And I've just loved it ever since, yeah.
What do you love about it? What on the sporting side of netball really gets to you?
When it comes to playing it, because I've always been a defender, and I know a lot of people think the glory goes to the shooters, but I always instinctively knew I wanted to be a defender, because I think there's nothing more exhilarating than getting a clean intercept, because it's so dynamic and you're winning the ball for your team against the odds. And then in addition to that, just the camaraderie that you build in a team situation, and you know, everyone's got their very specific role on a netball court, and a very common saying amongst netballers, and I think it's universal around the world, is this thing that we say to each other on court, and it's here if you need. And so, in netball, you have to pass the ball within 3 seconds, so you can't hold on to it, you can't dribble it like you might in basketball. You've literally, after 3 seconds, you've got to pass it to a teammate. And so you are constantly making sure that you are available to your teammate, so they've actually got someone to pass it to. So you're constantly working with your teammates. And that phrase, here if you need, is if you're just letting them know that you're there as an option. Mm. Yeah.
I won't ask you how sharp your elbows are, Bridget. I feel like that's implied by I'm a defender. Let's go back to the beginning of netball in New Zealand. When did it really start to be played here?
Yeah, I talked to a researcher about this, a researcher who has been looking at the history of it in New Zealand. And the first recorded game is around the late I think it was around 1897. So that's how far it goes back.
Yeah.
And back then it was sort of like part of the YMCA movement. And obviously it came to New Zealand via England. So as early as 1897. And I think female school teachers played a massive role in rolling it out in schools. And what I find really interesting is this researcher told me that, see, field hockey was quite popular for women as well in New Zealand. So it wasn't until 1920 that netball overtook hockey as the most popular female sport in New Zealand. But one of the big reasons why it was able to flourish is that the netballers weren't, the sport wasn't really in direct competition with boys' sports. So boys' sports like cricket, rugby, soccer in New Zealand needed big fields. Netball only needed a piece of asphalt or, probably fields back then, but only a small piece of field. So it wasn't in direct competition with boys' sports. And so that's why it was able to grow. And then, 1920, it took over as the most popular women's sport in New Zealand, and it's been that way for over 100 years. Like, by a country mile too.
Yeah, by a country mile, exactly, and a big country mile as well. I want to pick up on a really interesting remark that you made there, that netball maybe grew in popularity in the beginning because it wasn't in direct competition with what might then have been considered boys' sports, because that is such an issue now with regard to netball, isn't it? Is the fact that sports that have historically been totally dominated almost exclusively by men, all of a sudden are opening up to women, sometimes quite dramatically in the case of rugby, football, cricket. And that means competition for athletes that maybe netball hasn't actually had before.
Yeah, I think this has sort of happened over the last 10 years. So, in 2012 was the first year that the Blackburn Sevens or the New Zealand Women's Sevens team started on the circuit, on the international IRB circuit. So that is a very new team to New Zealand, but already they would be the third best paid top athletes in New Zealand, just behind the Silver Ferns. So they've got the competition with the likes of rugby sevens. They've got more competition now with rugby 15s. And they've got really competition now with cricket and football. The thing about sports like basketball, football, and cricket is that they're a lot more global than netball. So you take a teenage girl who's really good at netball and basketball. Basketball can offer scholarships to American colleges and the potential to go to the Olympics, and netball just can't offer that. And then you look at a sport like cricket, which is a very, very rich sport. India, and the population of 1 billion in India that obsesses about cricket. And we've known for a while now that the men's game is very rich, but they're seeing the potential of investing in the women's game and the potential untapped commercial opportunities through that. And so all of a sudden, these sports dominated by men are starting to invest in the women's side. And it's great for those sports, great for those women. But netball completely stands on its own 2 feet. They can't lean on a men's side, if you know what I mean, for any extra funding. So I worked out that, so our top New Zealand cricketer is Amelia Kerr. She's amazing. And I worked out that she pulls in $500,000 a year, once you include all her overseas contracts and in the women's IPL. The top New Zealand netballer can earn $135,000 a year. And just 10 years ago, Amelia Kerr could only have hoped to have earned $25,000 a year. So in the space of 10 years, you've gone from 25,000 to half a million.
That is,
So
gee, that's amazing,
that's
isn't it?
incredible.
And it's great. It's like, this is great, but It's an issue. It's a big issue for netball. And I guess one of the reasons that cricket has such financial power is that, as you mentioned, it has a huge global audience, which is ravenous for more sport. And that means that they can make a lot of money from broadcasters who want to put on that product. And the eyeballs is a big issue. That's where the money comes from. And your second piece in this three-part series, which I found fascinating, looks at whether a return to free-to-air TV could be a game-changer for netball. Tell us a bit about the context to this and the discussions, I suppose.
Yeah, so back in 2011, up until that point, netball had been shown on TVNZ, you know, free-to-air. Then 2011, Sky came along and offered more money. And so since then, it's been behind a paywall. And I spoke to the president of the head of the New Zealand Players Association, and she obviously wants netballers to get paid as much as they can, right? Because she's representing them on the Players Association. Yet she, at the same time, is saying that going back to free to air might, in the long run, actually be better for them. Even though, so in December last year, Dana Johansson did a story that, the Sky TV rights that come up for that end at the end of this season, that Sky was only offering less than Netball New Zealand, only less than half of what the current deal is. And so it was understood that Netball New Zealand was starting to talk to TVNZ. And so they're talking to these, Sky behind a paywall, TVNZ, who probably aren't going to have the money to pay Netball New Zealand as much as Sky, but you get more people watching your sport, and then you might get more sponsors along thinking, well, we've got more eyeballs, so we're going to actually give you guys more money anyway. So it's a really interesting debate, and I grew up watching it free-to-air on TVNZ. And the very interesting point that she made, Steph Bond, she's head of the Players Association, a lot of the demographic that play netball you are probably low income, you know, and they can't afford Sky. So we want those people to be able to watch the game.
That's such an interesting point. I mean, I used to watch a lot of netball on free-to-air when I was a bit younger. You know, Donna Lofhagen, as she was then, Belinda Colling and Irene van Dyk and stuff like that. But I haven't so much since it's been on pay TV. And I guess that is, it's such a fascinating tension, isn't it? Do you take a financial hit, hopefully short term, in order to bolster your reach and hopefully interest in it, or do you stick to your guns on the dollars because, you know, players, professional players in particular, don't want to take a pay cut?
Yeah, it's a dilemma. And do you have a conversation with the players and say, hey, do you mind being paid less for the next 2 years, but we hope in the long run this is going to be good for the sport? The other point she made is a lot of girls now might not even know who many of the Silver Ferns are, and probably a lot might not even know who some of the players in the ANZ Premiership are, because they just don't watch. They don't watch Sky TV, and they're competing with personalities like Ruby Tui and Sarah Hiddeney from the Sevens team, and Amelia Kerr and Sophie Devine, and so. Netball wants to get these personalities, these top netballers, into the consciousness of young girls, and they want them to be their heroes again.
Just finally, Bridget, are you optimistic about the future of netball in New Zealand, but also around the world?
Yeah, I am. The game has got some challenges, but when you look at the player base in New Zealand is still so strong. Like the numbers are just like sports like cricket, football, basketball, they're not even close to netball. So the playing base is there. I think on a global scale is maybe the bigger problem. I know that the World Netball is really keen to get netball into the Olympics, but that is going to be a really massive challenge. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull that off. We just need more countries to be stronger at the sport. Like for a while now, it's been sort of New Zealand, Australia. It's good that we've had better competition from England and Jamaica. They did better than us at last year's Netball World Cup. Yeah. So that in the long run is probably good for the sport, yeah.
Super interesting conversation, and the pieces are great as well. Bridget Tunnicliffe from RNZ, thanks very much for your time this evening.
No worries.
That's Bridget Tunnicliffe, and those three pieces you can find on the RNZ website. Just search up Bridget Tunnicliffe and it will take you there.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.